for the White House. Speeches of the 2016 U.S. election.
Amongst all the governors has always been someone to rely on, to seek out advice. He's a principle-centered leader. To all the elected officials here, I appreciate your service. I really do. It is a difficult time to be in public life because, gosh, I mean, if you're in Des Moines, they may confuse you of being elected and serving in Washington. It's a difficult time. There's not much trust, and so I appreciate the fact that you're doing this work. Chairman Kaufman, I know you're doing great work, and it's not easy to do, but I'm glad that you started drinking coffee again. Things are looking up. And Judy, I appreciate you being a county chairman here in Scott County. I was a county chairman for 3 years in Miami-Dade County. We doubled our Republicans. We went from 125,000 Republicans to 250,000 Republicans in 3 years. But I had Ronald Reagan as my president. It was a little bit easier when you had a hopeful, optimistic leader. And as a Republican chairman, we worked hard to be able to convert. And we actually converted some 70,000 Democrats to the Republican cause during that time. We need to restore that kind of leadership to draw people towards our party. This is an extraordinary time in our country's history. If you just think about it, you can see why people are angry. You see, read the headlines of dysfunction, of corruption, of sheer incompetence in Washington, D.C., promises made and promises not kept, a president who is talented, but he uses his talents almost exclusively to divide the country each and every day. He pushes down anybody that disagrees with him in any way to make them look bad and elevates and exaggerates his position. And that gap now makes it harder for our democracy to work. And many people believe that it's not going to work anymore, that the American century of last century was the one that we dominated, and now it's someone else's turn. I reject that out of hand. I believe we can fix Washington, D.C., and start fixing the big problems that this country faces. And we will be the world's economic superpower, and we will be the world's leader in the world to create peace and security. It is at our doorstep, but it requires principle-centered leadership to make it so. Think about the age of Obama. $8 trillion of new debt in the last 6 years. He's raised taxes over $2 trillion. 6.5 million people are working part-time that want to work full-time but are stuck in jobs because of Obamacare and regulations forcing businesses to push people into part-time jobs and lower income. 6 million more people are living in poverty than the day that Barack Obama got elected president. The middle class income for the first time in a recovery is down $2,000 in the last 7 years. People are depressed. People are angry. They are angry for legitimate reasons. And this great country of ours has had a downgrade of its credit below AAA. I never in my imagination, in my lifetime, would have imagined the state of affairs that we have today. Workforce participation rates are lower today than they were in 1977. We're in a heap of trouble, but the simple fact is that we can fix these things. Washington, though, with these economic numbers, all of which relate to us, right? Declining income is not in Washington, it's in the rest of the country. People living in poverty is not in Washington, it's the rest of the country. Washington has the highest per capita income in the United States of America. Washington's unemployment rate is negligible. Washington home prices never dropped during the financial crisis. Washington is doing fine. What we need to do is disrupt Washington, to challenge every aspect of what it does, to take it on. And make sure the special interest industry that has created such affluence for Washington, D.C. subsides. Maybe the moving van business out of Washington should be the growth industry in that part of the country so that we can grow and prosper again. And that's what I would do. If I'm elected President of the United States, I will downsize Washington, D.C. And I've had a proven record to do just that. I know how to do this. In Florida, I launched a campaign to say that we would shrink government, that personal income would grow faster. And every day, I focused on that. And the net result after a lot of disruption and a lot of angry people, the net result was over 8 years, our economy grew at double the rate of the national economy. It grew by 4.4% per year. Don't let the liberals and the pessimists say we can't grow our economy anymore at a 4% rate. Of course we can. We can do this, but we have to fix how we tax, fix a broken regulatory system, embrace the energy revolution in our midst, fix the fiscal structural problems that exist, and we'll grow at 4% per year as far as the eye can see, but not if we allow the progressives to continue to maintain control. In Florida, our economy grew. 1.3 million new jobs were created. We led the nation in job growth 7 out of 8 years. But the government didn't grow. The government shrunk by 11%. They called me Vito Corleone. At first, I thought that was an insult, and I think the people that were upset when I vetoed their line items in the budget, Senator, I think they might have thought that that was a bad thing. But I wore it as a badge of honor. 2,500 separate line items in the budget totaling $2 billion. I was an equal opportunity vetoer, by the way. Whether it was a Republican legislator or a Democratic legislator, if it didn't go through the process, it got vetoed. And the net result was, when I left office, we had $9 billion of reserves. And instead of the sorry state of affairs in Washington, D.C., where we've had this credit downgrade, Florida was one of two states during my 8 years to go to AAA bond rating. I left the state better because I applied conservative principles in a way that didn't disparage my opponents. I tried to find ways to bring them along. I start with the premise that everybody's a conservative. They just don't know it yet. And it's up to us to go persuade them and convince them to join our cause. And that's what we did in Florida. I took on the trial lawyers, and we won. I took on the teachers union, and we won. We had the first statewide voucher program in the country, the second statewide voucher program in the country, and the third. People didn't like it, but the net result is that we have the greatest gains of learning of any state in the United States. And kids, low-income kids, have had the greatest gains amongst their counterparts in the rest of the country. And kids with learning disabilities have the greatest gains. African-American kids are in the top five, and Hispanic kids do 2 grade levels ahead of their counterparts in the rest of the country. We're going to win if we're on the side of people that have given up. We're going to win if we're on the side of people that want to rise up, that want a better life. We shouldn't try to pick and choose who our supporters are. We should apply conservative principles, reform the things that are broken, focus on disrupting the old order so that everybody has a chance to rise. That's what I did as governor, and that's exactly what I would do as president of the United States. So what would that agenda look like? I support a balanced budget amendment, just as you have here in Iowa and Florida has. We should have a balanced budget amendment for the United States federal government. I believe we should have a version of a line item veto power. Vito Corleone needs to go to Washington, D.C. We should cut the pay of elected officials that don't show up to work. I don't know about you, but this idea that somehow voting isn't important, I mean, what are they supposed to do? They should go to the committee hearings. They should vote. The idea that somehow the private sector, when you don't show up to work, you get a pay cut, why shouldn't that exist in state capitals as it does, and why shouldn't it exist in Washington, D.C.? There should be a 6-year lobbying ban for elected officials that the revolving door ought to stop. There are a lot of great people that serve in Washington, D.C. They ought to come home. They can serve in lots of different ways. They shouldn't be lobbying immediately their counterparts, their former colleagues in their bodies. There should be term limits, just as there is in many states. The idea is to shrink the relevancy of Washington, D.C. and get back to what our founders envisioned, a constitution of limited government where we shift power back to the states. I trust Terry Branstad and the legislature here in Iowa to create the best Medicaid program for Iowans. I believe they have a better idea on how to build transportation. They know how to protect the natural environment of this great state far better than Washington, D.C. Shifting power back to Washington, reforming the career civil service system. This is a system that protects people that do horrible things. Think about it. The Veterans Administration. 330,000 employees. receiving some 60% increase in budget in the last 6 years. They have a bonus program for their management. The bonus program is given out when there's lower waiting lists. You would think that they would be getting care to get off the waiting list, but not in Washington. In Washington, people got off waiting lists and they died. You know how many people have been fired? 3. We need a new president that comes and cleans house and focuses on career civil service reform. In Florida, in spite of the fact that a lot of people were quite upset about this, in Florida, you can fire someone for not doing their job very well. And you can reward employees that do a great job. Longevity of service is not the way that you should pay people. It should be based on merit, and it should be based on serving. The simple fact is, people in government need to be our servant, not our master, and Washington long ago lost how to do that. And I believe bringing practical experience from a state capital is the way to make that possible again. What would you do then if we could change the culture in Washington? What would be the next step? Well, I believe, as I said, that we should create an environment of high sustained economic growth where more people have a chance at earned success. That's what people want. We should assume at the very beginning that that's exactly what people want. But there are now lids on people's aspiration. Every new carve-out of in the tax code, every new regulation puts a lid on people's aspirations. Every idea that the progressive liberals come up with makes it harder for people to have growing income in their families, makes it harder for businesses to create the jobs that we need to sustain economic growth. And if you look at the agenda on the other side, whether it's Secretary Clinton coming to Iowa and promising more money, more regulation, more spending, or Bernie Sanders, who I think is going to get the Olympic gold medal for the most promises made in a year before the election. $18 trillion of promises in new spending from the burn. Leading, by the way, against Hillary Clinton in New Hampshire. The progressives, all they've got left is another rule, another tax, more spending from up above. We need to offer a compelling alternative, and that alternative is to shift power away from Washington, eliminate the carve-outs, simplify the code, lower tax rates. That's how you create high sustained economic growth, and I have a tax plan that does just that. The economists that look at it on the left say it's more of the same. The economists on the right that look at it says we will grow from 0.5% to 1% per year, and more people will have more money in their pockets. Washington will do fine. Trust me, they always do fine. What about the great middle of our country that hasn't had a pay raise in 15 years? That's who we should be focused on, and a tax policy that reduces rates. In my plan, anybody making $40,000 a year, a family of four, would pay no federal income tax. And that will create economic activity the likes of which we haven't seen in a long, long while. If we reduce the corporate rates from the highest in the industrialized world to 20% and we allow for full expensing of all investing, Iowa will blossom. This is a capital-intensive economy here. And imagine businesses that would have that ability to fully depreciate every investment that they make in their first year. You know what would happen? High-wage jobs are created. Income in our communities would flourish. We would grow our economy at a faster rate than government growth. That should be our objective. Fixing how we regulate is another element of how you get back to high sustained economic growth. My personal belief is that there should be no new rules created in Washington, D.C. unless you replace it with a rule by getting rid of one. That there should be no higher economic impact based on these rules unless you find savings in another part of the regulatory regime. We should have a regulatory budget. And every chance we have, we should apply the 10th Amendment, which says that the powers should come inure to the states, not to the federal government, and across the board make our economy more resilient, lighter, more mobile, faster, embrace the 21st century rather than putting rules on top of rules. As I've traveled through Iowa, you hear farmers and other people talk about the waters of the United States. I would repeal that rule. It is a vast overreach of the federal government. If you talk to farmers in this state and other places too, they'll talk about EPA's overreach, and many of those rules need to be repealed as well. a focus on shifting the priorities back to have a balanced approach where the economic interests of our country have equal balance with the protection of the public good in all of its facets has to be the mission of the next president. And that's how you create high sustained economic growth. You also do it by embracing the energy revolution in our midst. For crying out loud, the XL pipeline needs to be approved. This is the most ridiculous idea that we're going against our own economic interest to placate radical environmentalists. The simple fact is this is safer, it is less carbon intensive, it creates thousands of jobs in our own country, high wage jobs. It is not in competition with any other forms of energy. It just integrates a North American energy market that keeps us secure and allows us to grow our economy at a far faster rate. And there are many other things that we can do. We could grow the economy at 4% per year, and I promise you that people would be lifted out of poverty and that there'd be rising income for the middle class. But we're never going to grow at that rate with the world being torn asunder. This world is now, there is living proof when you see the lack of American leadership. Throughout the world, our enemies no longer fear us, and they're running wild. Putin is not just the only example, but it is the most pressing example because of his activities in Syria. Look at what President Xi is doing as it relates to expanding the reach in the South China Sea without any pushback from the United States. Look at what's going on in Eastern Europe, where Putin is pressuring the Baltics and Eastern Europe and Ukraine, of course. Look at the Middle East turned totally upside down by a president who believes that mullahs go quietly into the night, that you can unilaterally make concessions and negotiate with someone who then the next day will shout death to America, death to Israel. We need to restore America's leadership in the world. We need to restore America's presence in the world, not as the world's policeman, but as the world's leader. The United States' word needs to be its bond. A president of the United States cannot talk trash and then not follow it up and back it up. This president has been wrong on foreign policy, and his former Secretary of State would be the third term of a bad foreign policy, and I believe we will reject this out of hand in 2016. Name a country in the world where our relationship is better today than it was the day that Barack Obama got elected president. Iran. Cuba. Name the countries where our relationship has been tarnished. Almost all the rest of them. Canada, for crying out loud. Our strongest trading partner. We've torn that relationship asunder. And many other countries as well. The first duty of the President of the United States is to keep us safe, and to be safe, we need to be engaged in the world. We cannot pull back. The left wants us to pull back, and some voices in our own party want us to pull back. It is too dangerous. It is too dangerous to do that. Peace through strength should be the objective of the next president, and I intend to be that president to create a more secure world. The final thing I want to say is, how does a Republican win in 2016? If you listen to the naysayers, you know, you look at the changing demographics and it seems like it's hard to do. Here's what I know to be true. A Republican will win when they campaign with their arms wide open. A Republican will win with a hopeful, optimistic message, a message that doesn't divide us. We've had 6 long years of a divisive president who has honed his skills in pushing down anybody that disagrees with them. Whether it's the Iranian agreement where he says that people that disagreed with this on principle were in cahoots with the Death to America crowd, while he negotiated with the Death to America crowd, or across the board on economic policy or tax policy or social policy. Whenever you don't completely agree with this president, his immediate impulse is to push people down. We can't follow suit. We have to be a party that understands why people are angry, but gives them solutions for the justification of their anger, gives them hope that we can fix these things by applying conservative principles, campaigns in every nook and cranny of this country, doing it with energy, doing it with passion, doing it with conviction. When I think about this, I don't think about the loud voices on the stage. I don't think about the 75 people running for president of the United States in our party. Most of them are fine people. It's not about us. It's about the single mom who has a kid in a languished, failing public school and wonders why they can't go to a high-performing charter school. I have my energy and passion thinking about them. Or the mom that has a child with severe developmental disabilities and wonders whether she will be able to outlive her child because she loves her with her heart and soul. Or the farmer that sees the challenges that exist and the rules being imposed on their activities in the harvest right now, thinking about this. And by the way, for those that have left the fields to come to this party, you're totally committed to the Republican Party. We just appreciate you. You think about the military families seeing the debate right now in Washington about the authorization of the defense bill, where the president is threatening to veto a refunding of our defense capabilities, and they wonder whether there'll be the equipment and training to be able to keep their loved ones safe. There are a lot of people that need a principle-centered leader on their side. It isn't about the political system. It's not about the political class. It's about millions and millions of Americans that are one or two paychecks away from utter disaster. We need to restore their right to rise. We need to be on their side. A conservative will win when we go campaign and encourage, give people a sense that their lives can be better. This should be the greatest time to be alive in this world. And we can fix it. And when we do, it will be that way. That's how I will campaign. I will campaign with heart. I will campaign all across this country, giving people a sense that we can fix these things and restore America's greatness again. I hope you'll join our cause. February 1st is right around the corner. I hope that you'll campaign for me, you'll show up at the caucus for me, and I will not let you down. God bless you all, and thank you all very much.